A couple of weeks ago, Dove was able to travel back to the Philadelphia area and go to Pendle Hill. Pendle Hill is a Quaker conference retreat center. And she attended the Truth and Healing Quaker Seeking Right Relationship with Indigenous Peoples. And I've asked her to come and share with us something about that weekend and the work that they did together as they were with a number of other folks that were gathered in that place at Pendle Hill. And so, Dove, come and share with us what's on your heart.
Thank you so much for bringing the mic to me. I was worried about which mic, Thanks. So I'd like to start by acknowledging that this is a land that used to be shared by the Duwamish, Shilshol Amish. You know, Shilshol, there was actually a tribe, the Shilshol Amish, that were here. Snoqualmie tribe and the Squamish tribe. To acknowledge that they used to be here and used to share this land in a very different form from what it is today. So this, in, some of you might know that I've started a job as the morning news host for KBCS Radio, and so I've got this title up here, Nakani Northwest Native Committee Report. Yes, it's a news report from the Nakani Northwest Native Committee. And the Nakani Northwest Native Committee is what used to be the AFSC Northwest Indian Committee and was laid down, but Nakani strives on. And Nakani is a Tlingit word that means go-between. So when the Nakani Northwest Native Committee found out that there was going to be a meeting called Truth-telling, Quaker-seeking right relationships with Indigenous peoples, they thought that it would be perfect for me to go, as I'm Quaker and Native and part of the Nakani Native Committee. So we raised money for me to get to go, and I went. And Lorraine asked me to speak some about what I found that represented that of God at Pendle Hill during this meeting of truth-telling, Quaker-seeking right relationships with Indigenous peoples. And so I'm going to start with joys, and then I'll go on to concerns, because like Thomas Kelly says, concerns come from God, too. And not only the joys, but there were some joys, wonderful ones, there at Pendle Hill. But, of course, the weekend was full of concerns about what role Quakers had played in cultural genocide of Indigenous peoples, both in Canada and the United States. So I'll start with the joys. And the first section is the violets. I love violets. And when I was living in Cambridge, there was a little violet at the foot of the steps of the building where I lived, and it would bloom even in the winter. And it was so brave. I used to love that little violet. So when we went to Way of the Spirit for the first time, we were at a priory or a nunnery that had violets in the lawn. And I tried to bring a violet home, getting permission from the nuns. I brought it home, and it died. So at Pendle Hill, where I was staying in the dorm, outside my window each morning, day and evening, a placidly pink and green tree just was out there to be enjoyed. And on the way to breakfast was wisteria. But if I was rushing across the campus, I would be rushing across these violets that were around the edge of every swatch of lawn at Pendle Hill. And I asked somebody from Buildings and Grounds if I could gather a violet. And they said, oh, sure, fine. And I asked if they would gather it for me. They did. They left it by my door. But then the people who do maintenance took it away. So As I turned to leave Pendle Hill on the very last day, a tiny vehicle pulled up in front of me and stopped, and a gentleman leaned out and offered me a lidded cup of violets that had been lovingly taken up from the lawn. So violets are back home with me. And then one of the things that I find challenging when I go to, mainly when I go to Convergent Friends meetings, is that I'm one of the very, very few people of color that are there. And I have a friend who has served as my white ally as I sit in these places where I'm feeling like a cockroach at a chicken party. And it's not that the Quakers actually are going to attack me. It's just that, you know, there are all kinds of microaggressions that can go on, and it's tiring sometimes. So I've had a white ally who's been with me at FCNL gatherings and other sort of Convergent Friends gatherings, but he wasn't at this one. And when I took a look around myself at Pendle Hill, at even this gathering for truth-telling, I thought, oh, just up from the depths of me came a cry, I wish I had a white ally here. And so at dinner that night, a gentleman sat beside me and was very respectfully quiet as a bunch of us women of color were just talking about what's going on. And when we finished a little while later and all the sisters took their leave and said their goodbyes, this gentleman stayed. And his name is Roberto, and he turns out to be an able white ally, and he was that throughout the weekend for me. So God sent an ally for me. Now, for the concerns. This section is called The Doctrine of Discovery Strikes Again. And some of you were with me as we were learning about the Doctrine of Discovery, which is the doctrine of some of the popes in the 14th, 15th century who sent the explorers off with a mission that if they found any land that wasn't inhabited by Christians, they could take it. And they could kill the inhabitants or try to convert them. If they converted, then you didn't have to kill them. But if they didn't convert, it was okay to kill them and take their possessions and their treasuries and their land. So this happened, you know, in the 1400s, but it's the basis for some case law, even in the United States today. As recently as 2015, the Supreme Court ruled against a tribe calling on the doctrine of discovery to prop up the claims of a city to some lands that the tribes were trying to reclaim or to reclaim based on treaties that they had made. So that's a doctrine of discovery, and that's running all through the U.S. history of relationships with Native peoples. And in fact, during the later years of more enlightened or so-called more enlightened theory, the doctrine of discovery wasn't as much referred to, but there was the idea of kill the Indian to save the man, so that Indians would be, Indian children were taken forcibly from their families, and they were... their hair was cut, which is something that wasn't usually done unless somebody had died in your family. And it sort of, it was like somebody was dying. It was you that was dying. And their hair was cut. They were punished for speaking their own language. And it was in that period that Quakers began to have more of a role in the cultural genocide. So when we got to Pendle Hill, when we had our first gathering, welcomed by three chiefs of Delaware area tribes. They're the Lenape, and the Ramapo. And the Ramapo have a special request for all of us that I'll tell you a little bit later. But those chiefs welcomed us. They were very gracious, and We had people representing the main Potawatomi tribe, the Navajos, the Blackfeet, the Cherokee, the Tlingit, Coast Salish and Muckleshoot, Dakota and Lakota, the Methow here in Washington, Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, and a tribe in Boulder, whose name I can't remember. I'm sorry, I didn't look it up again. And there were even Quechua people there that were with us. They all have a similar story in that it was disease that got so many people, like half of the people that were here in the early days were wiped out by the new diseases that were brought by the European visitors and settlers. And then there was the Indian Wars, and then after those wars were the boarding schools. And the boarding schools, like I say, the idea was to kill the Indian in order to save the man that was within. So the idea was to stop the kids from speaking their native language, stop them from dressing the way their ancestors had been dressing, and to get them to try to forget about who they were back on the reservation or wherever their people were. So I'm thinking about the boarding schools. There are echoes in present-day life of this approach, modern-day emulators, with the... I think about the people who are in Israel-Palestine in that conflict there. They don't have boarding schools per se, but they are trying to get rid of all of these people that are on this land that they think is theirs, but these people have been there for quite some time. There was some talk, interesting talk, about intergenerational trauma and what's called perpetration-induced trauma syndrome. That is the trauma that's induced when somebody is part of a perpetrating class of people that have perpetrated atrocities on another. Those perpetrators have a trauma that they're undergoing as well, and that needs to be treated and acknowledged as well. We also heard about the Canadian First Nations and Canadian Yearly Meeting of Friends collaborating to start a truth and reconciliation process. And one of our native presenters didn't like the idea of reconciliation since there had not been conciliation to begin with. But that's what the Canadians have been doing. And it's gotten to the point where the Canadian federal government has actually issued an apology to the First Nations, and the churches, some of the churches have issued apologies to the First Nations for their role in cultural genocide. That's all of concern here, because Quakers were part of that cultural genocide. So what I wanted to tell you about the Ramapo chief asked us to remember them, and if we could, maybe write a letter in their support, because on January 25th, 2018, despite a ruling in their favor, the city of Mawa took the Ramapo Lenape Nation to court over tents and other structures on the tribe's own land. They won. They won the court case before, right? But then they came back to get another ruling against the Lenape. Tribe members built an encampment of teepees last year to protest a crude oil pipeline project in North Dakota and the proposed Pilgrim pipeline in New Jersey. So they have their own oil pipeline that's going through where they live that they're trying to stop. The township issued dozens of summonses against the tribe, accusing it of violating local zoning law by erecting the structures without the necessary approvals. Why should they get approval if it's their land? This was land that was promised to them in a treaty, but they've gotten in trouble with the law over that. So they would like our prayers and our thoughts to help them in this. So... there was so much that happened. I just gave you a little bit of it. I'll settle with what can we Quakers do? And what we've been asked to do is to learn which tribes were the original inhabitants of our present meeting houses, learn which tribes were the original inhabitants of the land on which our homes stand, to acknowledge that tribe or those tribes, and reach out to that tribe's tribal center. Ask about the tribe's experience in relation to the land we now occupy and see where this conversation leads. And find out what land and resource issues are important to the tribe now. Find out if there are ways that we can support the tribe in their advocacy. And watch and discuss Two Rivers, about a retired non-native couple in Twisp, Washington, who begin to ask the questions above. And so that we saw that movie. That movie was about how the Methow tribe and the citizens of Twisp came to some sort of conciliation about what had happened, and to come to a celebration of what is now with both the newcomers, the settlers, and the tribal people, the Methow tribal people. So it's a beautiful movie, and it's good to see. So how am I doing for time? Oh, okay. Yes. It's called Two Rivers. Mm-hmm. Two Rivers. And so I have at the end here, oh, I wanted to let you know, too, that all the guest presenters got a precious gift from someone within the Pendle Hill community who was also Native. And in many instances, what the presenters got was a pouch of seeds of a traditional strain that's just now regenerating. So that's the kind of gifts that were given. Yeah. So so ending, I wanted to speak from the Quaker part of me, from the Native part of me, and from the African-American part of me. So from the Quaker part of me, I am so proud that the Quakers are willing to stop and look at how we've been complicit with the cultural genocide of the tribes that were indigenous to where we now have our meeting houses and our homes. And there were many, many declarations from Quakers as to what will be done when we get home. And I pray that we all come through with those promises. Then from the part of me that's Native, it was interesting to sit within a group of people who have benefited from the removal of Native people, and realize and see them realize what they had been complicit in doing, and to hear their sincere wish to make amends and to apologize for their part in the dispossession of my people from our lands. And as an African American, it was odd to be there because, yes, I'm living on usurped land, but I was brought here against my will. So what am I supposed to do? I remember back to when one of the tribes was about to get a casino. Maybe it was Snoqualmie. And there was a big public to-do about, oh, they shouldn't be able to do that. And I remember seeing on television an African-American man being interviewed who said, look, this is their land. They have the right to do whatever they want to on their land. So we should just stay out of it. And I was proud that somebody like me would say that.